opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of Salem Communications, staff, management, or advertisers.
Activist Radio is on the air.
You have tuned in to the Mark Harrington Show, sponsored by Created Equal.
Mark is training a new generation of leaders
to take on the culture of death and win.
If you don't like abortion, don't have one.
The only thing that can be said to be objective truth is that there is no objective truth.
It does come out in one piece. It comes out in one piece.
I would argue that we certainly are not all created equal.
And now, here's Mark.
Acts chapter 16, verse 20 says, "And when they had brought them to the chief magistrates, and when they had brought them to the chief magistrates, they said, 'These men are throwing our city into confusion.'" Well, they were doing that. That's about the apostles, by the way. They were doing that because they were preaching the gospel, which was countercultural to the society in which they were in. And we find that quite often with what we do. We are preaching a message of life, that life is precious, life is sacred, that we're all created equal and made in the image of God. When we go out into the public square, it's a countercultural message. And we often send these men and women into confusion, and they react poorly sometimes. And we find this happening more and more. Our ministry is not meant to be behind the four walls of a building where we sit and teach and read and learn, and so that we can be smart and, you know, be intelligent people and strong Christians as far as our understanding. No, the whole purpose of it is to go out into the highways and the byways. And folks, if you're not doing that, you are not fulfilling your role as a Christian. Jesus said, "Go therefore and make disciples of the nations." Well, we do that. And sometimes before we even show up, there are people waiting for us. And in this case, unfortunately, it happened at Gehenna Lincoln High School here in Columbus. We go on the sidewalks of public high schools because we can't go on the private property. And God forbid we actually got inside and spoke to someone in a classroom. Of course, Planned Parenthood couldn't do that, but we're not allowed. So we do what we can by reaching them on the outside. I will say this. We reach more students outside the high school than anyone would ever reach inside the high school, because you're only reaching a very small segment of that demographic. The entire school talks about us when we're out there. And so because of that, there's opposition. And often it's not the students who are upset or opposed to us. It's the parents. The parents and those who live in the community. And in this situation, it's a man who lived in Gehenna who is laying in wait for our young people to arrive to set up our signs and begin the dialogue with high school students. And as he was laying in wait, he came up to our students as we were unloading, and this was what happened.
"What? You going to harass high school kids?
What do you mean?
No! Stop! You going to harass high school kids?
No, we're here to set a shooting."
"Sir? Sir?
You will not film me at all. You don't have my permission. You don't have my permission to film me at all. No.
This is violent. What are you doing?
It's not violent. You don't have my right to film me."
Well, there you go. And that video is on our website at createdequal.org, or you can go to our YouTube page, Created Equal Films. Here's the thing. You know, this may seem a little bit odd that this happens to us often, but to be honest with you, it shouldn't be unusual. If you read the scriptures in the book of Acts, the apostles were constantly being beat up. In fact, right after this, in Acts chapter 16, Paulus and Silas were in prison, and it says the crowd rose up together against them, and the chief magistrates tore their robes and proceeded to order them to beat them with rods. And when they inflicted many blows upon them, they threw them into prison, commanding the jailer to guard them securely. And he, having reached such a command, threw them into the inner prison, which I imagine is worse than the outer prison, and fastened their feet in stocks. Question. When was the last time you were beaten up for Jesus? I mean, it's not necessarily the litmus test. But when was the last time you were thrown into prison for preaching the gospel? When was the last time you were receiving many blows or had your feet put in stocks? I understand we live in a free country, so to speak. But more and more, this is becoming what I would consider the norm, and it should, in a sense. Not that we're seeking this or inviting it or trying to manipulate things to happen so that we can beat our chests and tell everybody how righteous we are because we got beat up or we got thrown in jail or we're being sued. But the truth of the matter is this should be somewhat normal for the Christian who is preaching the gospel in a countercultural way. In a culture that does not increasingly believe in truth, absolute norms and morality, we're going to find this more and more. And unfortunately, our young people, they experience this often. We do all we can to protect them as much as we're able. We have protocol in place, security protocol, to make certain that this doesn't happen. But we can't stop a lone wolf like this individual, who, by the way, is now facing charges of fourth-degree misdemeanor for disorderly conduct in the city of Gahanna. Because we prosecute people because I believe they need taught a lesson so they won't do it again. But, he went on about how he's not physically assaulting anyone and that it wasn't violence as he's basically wrestling with one of our youth. It's unbelievable. But here's the deal. It's increasingly common for abortion advocates, and I would just say generally non-believers who are violently opposed to abortion, are in support of abortion or antichrist, to not only dissent to our message, but also resort to violence to defend their position. And it's not a stretch to understand that abortion advocates would use violence to intimidate preborn defenders. So this phenomenon that we're seeing where it's more acceptable to object to someone's message with violence is something that's been written about more recently in the last couple of years when college campuses have been creating what they call safe zones, areas where young adults can be shielded from opposing points of view. Now, you would think in a free country that would be just, laughed at, but it's not anymore. Political correctness reigns. That's why, for an example, I think Donald Trump is where he is, because he is incorrect politically, but I digress. In an article that appeared in the Atlantic Magazine, this was last fall. In an article in the Atlantic Magazine called Coddling of the American Mind, the authors in this article, which I really exhort you to go and read, explain this phenomenon where an individual like this person at Gahanna Lincoln High School feels that he is justified in acting out violently against a message that bothers him, and then turns around and says it's not violent. What he's doing is not violent. And we're seeing this in the political campaign, too. And in this article, there's a couple of phrases. And here, I want to read from the article. Quote, "The ultimate aim, it seems, is to turn campuses into safe spaces." Now, in our case, it was the high school campus. where young adults are shielded from words and ideas that make them uncomfortable. This movement seeks to punish anyone who interferes with that aim, even accidentally. You might call this impulse vindictive protectiveness. Vindictive protectiveness. When speech comes to be seen as a form of violence in and of itself, vindictive protectiveness can justify a hostile and perhaps even violent response. And so that's really what's going on here. That's the phenomenon. That's the psychology, the sociology maybe, of the reactions that we see to political messages, or for the, in this case, social messages, issues of abortion or whether it be homosexuality or the whole transgender issue, where there are individuals in our nation that believe that the message itself, the idea, is violent in itself. And if you interfere with someone, you know, trying to go about doing what they wish, like in this case, this guy obviously supports abortion, doesn't want his kids to see the photos. Because it interferes with their aim or their position or their agenda, whether it be gay rights or abortion or transgenderism, they believe that they have a right to act out violently because they have been, in their view, also been a subject of the violence of the words or the ideas or the themes or the thoughts, the notions. Vindictive protectiveness. It's a phenomenon I think we're seeing more and more across America as people depart from the ability to disagree in a way that's not disagreeable, to be civil in their discourse, to be able to disagree with folks and not get angry enough to act out violently. We're seeing that more and more. And folks, as the culture becomes less Christian, more anti-Christ, more against the gospel, more opposed to the sanctity of human life, marriage, all things that we would consider to be, you know, norms in this nation because of our foundations in Christianity. Unfortunately, I think we're going to see more of this, folks. So I know this isn't a big recruiting tool. Let's just say that. When I play these videos and I go online and when I talk on the radio about these acts of violence against our youth, I know the parents out there are thinking, you know, I'm not going to send my kid to Created Equal. They may end up, 6 feet under. Well, you know, here's the thing. If you feel that way, don't send me your children. Don't send me your kids. The young people that are coming to us are ones that want to live bigger than themselves, that have a cause greater than their own self-interest, that want to change the world for Jesus and are willing to lay down their lives for their friends. And folks, we're not stupid about this. We're very smart about it. But on occasion, this happens. And we need more and more people willing to go out and press it. Press the message into the culture, because the gospel's important enough for that. And saving lives and changing hearts and keeping people from harm is important as well. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Mark Harrington Show, your voice of resistance. Stick around.
Troy Newman talks about why he supports Mark Harrington and Created Equal.
You know, to me, Mark Harrington is more than just a friend of 20 years. He's a colleague that blends kind of this rare expression of passion and intelligence. And it's locked in, and he's tuned in to the young people, the people who don't know Christ, don't understand the pro-life message. You know, the other thing I love about Mark and Created Equal is they think strategically. They've got a long-term vision to turn the pro-life movement over to the next generation, to use the tactics of this day and age, to think ahead of what the next tactic is going to be, and use it for long-term impacts to ultimately win this battle. We're here to win because winning is how the killing stops. We're not here just to perpetuate a job, and Mark isn't here just to continue to have a job. I think Mark's a lot like me. We want to work ourselves out of a job win this battle and then go on to something else, like raise our families.
I guess more than anything, I'm just the voice of your conscience. Here's the question. Are you doing enough? Or are you backing down? Are you backing down? I mean, if nothing else, I am your conscience. I am telling you, as a believer in Jesus Christ, that you need to follow hard after him. You need to lay it all down. Give it all up, and your hand should be open to what Jesus wants to do in your life, which includes the possibility of being persecuted, the possibility of being verbally and physically assaulted for your faith. Because that's the standard. If you read the scriptures, and ultimately, if necessary, lay down your lives for Jesus. In Acts chapter 5, verse 29, after the apostles were preaching the gospel, Peter and the apostles answered and said, "We must obey God rather than men." The magistrates were telling them they should not preach the gospel anymore, and they basically said, "Too bad. We're going to obey God rather than man, and we are going to live with the consequences." And Gamaliel gives counsel in this chapter, and he's one of the council members to others. And he says this in verse 40. All right, let me start in 38. "And so in the present case, I say to you," and he's talking to his fellow council, "stay away from these men." He's talking about the apostles right there. "And let them alone. For if this plan of action," and that is the action to quash the preaching of the gospel, that was the action that the council was considering. "If this action should be of men, it will be overthrown." Good point. "But if it's of God, you will not be able to overthrow them, or else you may even be found fighting against God." Verse 40. "And then they took his advice, and after calling the apostles in," in other words, they had one of those Jesus moments, "they took their advice and called the apostles in. They flogged them and ordered them to speak no more in the name of Jesus, and then they released him." Instead of, in other words, they didn't keep him in prison. And the reaction of the apostles is classic. "And so the apostles went on their way from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they had been considered worthy to suffer shame for his name." How many of you are willing to suffer shame for his name? How many of you rejoice in the minor persecutions of maybe having to lose a reputation with people? Or to be uncomfortable when you have to say that you're a Christian and that you believe in traditional marriage, or that abortion is wrong, or there's only one way to heaven through Jesus, or something of that nature. How many of you rejoice in that? And how many of you, on the other hand, cower in fear or are worried about what people think, how they might treat you, might look at you, or what? In light of this passage, I don't understand how anyone could, if they claim the name of Christ, could see those types of things as anything on the level of what the apostles went through. I understand we live in America. We don't live in the Roman Empire. I get that. But if you are doing what you should as a Christian, you should be experiencing persecution, even possible physical retribution, and even the likelihood possibly of death. And if you don't embrace that and understand that as part of the Christian mission, you're missing it. And the reason I bring this up, and again, this is not going to be one of my best recruiting tools, but there's some piece of legislation at the State House that frankly concerns me and bothers me as a Christian believer. And it's HB 286, and it's been coined the Pastor Protection Act. Pastor Protection Act. And the purpose of this bill was for pastors to be able to decline to perform same-sex weddings in their churches and for the property to which they have, the church, that it can't be used either for those ceremonies. And in the law itself, or bill, they are saying that they should be immune from civil or criminal penalties if they refuse to do this. In other words, it's protecting pastors from being forced to perform a same-sex wedding if someone comes to them from within or without their congregation or to use their church to do so. In the bill itself, it says this: no religious society is required to allow any building or property for the religious society to be used to host a marriage ceremony for a marriage that does not conform to the religious society's sincerely held beliefs. Now, I don't know what a religious society is, actually. I guess it's not defined in the bill, but I assume that just kind of covers all the bases. This section also refuses to, an ordained and a licensed minister described in this section, if they refuse to solemnize a marriage or refuse to allow any buildings of the property of the religious society to be used to host a marriage ceremony because of the ordained or licensed minister's religious society's sincerely held beliefs, they cannot be held liable for civil or criminal penalties. Now, that's the law. Here's the thing. I understand why pastors and churches are right now worried about getting sued if they decline to perform a same-sex marriage or allow their church to be used. I get that, right? I mean, they're practical. They're trying to think about the future of the church, the budget, the survival of the church if they were to get sued. I understand all that. But here's my point, a couple of things. First of all, it's not needed. First Amendment protects our rights to decline to perform a same-sex marriage or allow someone to use our building if we choose. Now, you'll say, well, that's not necessarily true, Mark, because cake bakers and pizza makers and all the rest of them are losing in court and these laws are having to be passed and such and so. Well, maybe that's true. But the First Amendment should protect our rights, and if necessary, we should, if asked, to perform a same-sex marriage, simply declines based on what the Scripture says, and then deals with the problem that might bring to him and his church. And then, as Paul did in the book of Acts, appeals to the rights that he had as a Roman citizen to defend himself. We should use all those laws that are in place, especially the First Amendment, to protect our rights. And if necessary, go into court to secure and protect those rights. But to initiate an entirely separate piece of legislation to protect pastors from losing their money, to me, is a bit over the top. And my other question is, many of these pastors, and I know just because I was there, I mean, when we were fighting this gay marriage issue, it was hard to get the church on board. Many pastors were quiet, saying, you know, it doesn't really have a lot to do with me. It's not germane to our mission, and so forth and so on. So a lot of pastors and churches were AWOL when it came to the gay marriage debate. And now they want to run to the state house and appeal to Caesar to protect them because now it's personal. Now it matters to them and their budget. Folks, we're living in perilous times. It's time for pastors to stand up and speak the truth and do the right thing without turning to the government to protect them. Just because it's now affecting them personally, now they want to get involved? I mean, please, let's look at this realistically. Now it affects them because it affects the money. It affects their church and their budget. We should rename this bill the Coffers Protection Act. Because that's really what it's all about. It's about money, protecting money. Pastors should be preaching the truth from this pulpit, irrespective of the results or the things that might come back. They need to be smart about it, certainly, and appeal to the laws we already have in place to protect them. But they should be proclaimers of the gospel, a prophetic voice to our culture, and not be worried about what might come if they do the right thing. There's nowhere in Scripture, folks, where I see that you can appeal to Caesar to protect us from persecution. It's part and parcel of being a believer in Jesus Christ. We need to be smart in our defense of our rights, but we also need to stand with God and believe in faith that He will prevail in the end. We'll see you next time. God bless you. God bless America. And remember, America, to bless God.
You've been listening to Mark Harrington, your radio activist, sponsored by Created Equal. For more information on how to become a witness against the evil plague in America, call Created Equal at 614-269-7808, 614-269-7808, or go online to createdequal.net, createdequal.net. Be sure to tune to The Mark Harrington Show next time for your marching orders in the culture war.